You need to think in terms of boundaries, not for just yourself, but because you're going to be dealing with lots of people who are in the midst of boundaries. And you can give them hope if you can show the kinds of things that are happening and what is happening now in their life and how God is using that to shape them in their life. You can help them. So, if you want to buy them, right up here, and they're $1.50, and I don't have any change. I got $1.50 over there, so they're 50 cents, but other than that, I don't have any change. Okay, I'm going to close. And what I want to close with is what I've observed about finishing well. What's up? I don't get it. What's that? Is it okay?
Sure. He doesn't have the $1.50 yet. This covers the coffee cup.
I want to talk about finishing well. As I've studied people, I got a man that lives right across the office from me. And he's about 84 right now. And I just love that man. I watch him. He sort of shuffles across the campus. He's got an honorary position. He's the chaplain to the faculty. He's got an honorary position. And he's just such a godly person. He's 83 years old. He's had ministry in 5 decades of church life. You know. And he's just such a precious guy. And I love him. You know why I love him? Because he's finishing well. And I want to see people who finish well. They encourage me and inspire me. With so many people who are dropping out of ministry and not finishing well now, when you see one that's finishing well, it's so inspiring. And he's that way. Well, this guy loves God. He has the fruit of the Spirit in his life. And his name is Bob Munger. Have any of you run across Bob Munger?
Yeah.
He wrote this little sermon. I mean, he did a sermon on Sunday night once, which is typed up, called My Heart, Christ, Home. Any of you read that? That's all Bob Munger. He never got a cent of royalty for that. That thing has sold about 16 million copies. You know, never got a cent of royalty out of that. Doesn't bother him. You know, a bit. He's a godly man. Love him to death. But here's what finishing well has been as I've observed it. People maintain a personal, vibrant relationship with God right up to the end. Have you ever been around old people? My mom ran a nursing home last 16 years of her working life. And so that nursing home, because she ran the nursing home, it sent $150 a month into our missionary support. So every time I went through Jackson, she would make me go out there and preach at the nursing home. You know, they were supporting my ministry. I would get out there and touch base with them. Well, boy, I dreaded going out to the nursing home. And I'd go out there, and most of the people are in wheelchairs or hobbling along. And there are two kinds of people for the most part. And they're the kind of people that are, what's the word? They're so senile that they can't remember anything. Nothing works. It doesn't matter, whatever. And then, sort of that kind of way, you know. It's light. They don't think of anything in depth or whatever. And then the other kind of people are the people that gripe. You got the people that gripe about everything. Nothing's right. It doesn't matter what they're doing. The food's bad. The wheel doesn't turn on the thing or something. I don't know what it is. Everything is bad. Every now and then, you'll find a person out there who is bright and cheerful, loves the Lord, and they just have a demonstration in their life that's different. Had a lady out there. She sent us $10 a month. She sewed. She sewed these things and sold them and sent us $10 a month. Well, I love that woman. You know, out there. I didn't mind going out and talking to her. But anyway, don't you like to be around somebody who's old and yet is joyful, has the fruit of the Spirit in their life? Personal, vibrant relationship, Christ-likeness. If the Holy Spirit really works, then it ought to happen. The fruit of Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. If He's really working in life, that ought to happen in our lives, and we ought to be different people. That ought to happen. Learning posture. People who finish well continue to learn all their life. They learn from people that are a lot younger, don't know anything. They learn from them. They learn from older people. They learn from books. They learn from life. They learn. They have convictions. One thing I appreciate about Bob is that he has convictions that God is real, that God's promises are real. He can hold on to those promises, and he's made them work in his lifetime. I mean, God's made them work. Well, I love that. And he does. Fifth thing, they leave behind an ultimate contribution. Now, one of the things we do when we study ministry philosophy and we look for the focus variable, that is, as God begins to move us toward that which he wants to accomplish in our life, one of the things that help us understand that is the concept of an ultimate contribution. What are we going to leave behind? And most of us will have a set of one or two of these things that will be who we are in what we leave behind. Well, Bob has left a lot behind. And they walk with a growing awareness of a sense of destiny, that God has been in their life counts, and when life is finished, it's been worth it all. Okay, six things, at least that I've observed. Now, other people have different definitions of what finishing well is. Paul, do you have any different on this? Are you roughly in the same ballpark? Okay, that's where I want to close with you. I want to exhort you to finish well. And every phase of life is different. And every phase has its challenges. And those things that can take us away from finishing well all along the way. One of those things that can take us away from finishing well is getting in a boundary and not processing or negotiating it. So I hope you'll do a little thinking about boundaries and about responding well to the things that happen to you in a boundary. And that's my prayer, Lord. Help us to look back, to look up, and to look forward as you move us through our boundaries. For Jesus' sake we pray. Amen.
We as a navigator organization, particularly the U.S. navigators, are going through a boundary time. Did you pick that up? I mean, how would you analyze where we are on that? That's part of it, isn't it? You know, identity crisis is part of, you know, that can stimulate it. And, of course, I was involved in the beginning of that, and as we began to recognize, we were out of sync with what was happening in our world. And as we began to recognize that and have inputs of it, it began a whole series of changes. And many of those you're involved in. And it's really important to recognize that, and to recognize that out of this, that we should have hope because it will come. And there, you know, those three functions that Bobby talked about, the task-oriented function, which you call structural.
Initiation of structure.
And then the consideration function, which is the relational. And often we just look at those, well, we're more task or more relational. But the third one is so important, the inspirational. And it's my analysis at this point is that's what the U.S. Nav is missing. We have not found the inspirational at this point. And God's going to have to bring that together because we need leadership that will call us to believing God for the next phase of the navigators. And many leaders we need to do that. Call us to faith, to believe God, to believe that He is the one who has promised to bring us this far. He will bring us to the next phase. He will use us. Not just calling us to vision and get out there and kind of do it. That's more of the task orientation, exhortation. But God's going to raise up some of you and others that will do that very thing. And we need that, the inspirational function, because the next phase of the navigators will not come cheaply. It'll be a high cost. High cost in terms of believing God, because the forces, the spiritual forces, the resistance that we're going to experience, the uncertainty of our time, the financial difficulties we're going to have to continue on in the way we have continued. It just, many things are against us to pursue all the will of God and finish well as an organization. And finish well may not be that we're organizationally intact. God may have it that the navigators are part and explode into a movement, and the actual navigators themselves in 10, 20 years may be history as an organization, or they may be key to keeping it going. But there are a lot of things out in front of us. And so I find myself praying all the time for the inspirational side, that God's going to raise up godly men and women to inspire us to finish what God's called us to do. So join me in prayer for that. And perhaps you're already praying that. And I think it'll take a new generation. I think God's doing that, and we're seeing that. And that was part of the release that I experienced in leaving the U.S. ministry, that God is doing something very special. And God's just going to raise up a whole new generation. So we'll be in prayer on that, and that's an important one. We could analyze the U.S. ministry in light of Bobby's boundary.
I didn't mention that boundaries, organizations go through boundaries too, and essentially follow the same kind of stages. So there is quite a bit of similarity.
Yeah. And my analysis is that we've stopped gaining most of the light from the rear of the tunnel, and we're starting to get light from the front. And that's a little bit more. I'm a distant observer now, to some degree, and I'm seeing that in the kind of feedback I'm getting. So that's good. I don't know how long the tunnel is. Like Skip Gray says, it's a terrible thing when you recognize the light you see at the end of the tunnel is the train coming towards you. So always the great optimist, Skip is. So, well, I'm not going to go over that much time as we talked about, but I felt it was important, we both did, about this whole thing on just mentoring. What I heard as we went around and talked is the need for mentoring. We gave the working title of our book, Please Mentor Me. And Nav Press wisely changed it, because mentoring, as all things, that word, it becomes overused as discipleship and many other words, and before you know it, it has no meaning. And you don't need to take this all down, because it's all in the book if you're that interested, but I'm just going to highlight some things. We desperately need a network of relationships. And I've come to the point that somebody asked me one time after doing a whole session on this, boy, you really think they're important. And I said, there's so much to... he says, how important do you feel that mentoring or a network like that is? I said, I've come to the conclusion that people will never come to their full capacity that God has for them, and they'll never basically finish well without a network of relationships. God has not designed the Christian life to go independently. And whether we have this hard accountability we talked about, a lot of it is our nature, but those of us who don't have a relationship that is looking and concerned and feels responsible for our personal growth inside and out, internal growth and outside growth, if no one is thinking about you and praying about you and senses responsibility for you, I would be concerned if that's you. And I think it's just that important. So some of these things can come to life as we experience them, and some are just academic, but most people have already experienced mentoring. If we were to sit here and then ask everybody have an opportunity to talk about the people who have impacted your life, you would probably have a lot to share. Now, you remember that timeline that I showed you. I just wanted to say something in way of introduction. Go through this again. I put it down here, Bobby. Not on all your stuff. Well, I'll just have to drink a new one. No. It was that other one I drew. When we talk about this, remember the importance of these 18, and we have 30, and we have 50. And I talked to you about the different things of high growth and high learning here, and contribution here, and investing.
Sorry.
Oh, thanks. Well, when we look at that, the role of mentors and peers is very important. At this place here, what kind of mentoring is needed? Look back to your own experience. What types of people influenced your life during your 20s? Role models, okay? Absolutely. Inspiration, role modeling. That is so true. I have talked to more people. Matter of fact, I was with just several weeks ago a number of people who have had significant ministries in their life, and they're now in their 50s, 60s, and 70s. Two of them were in their 70s. They wanted to know more about deliberate and intentional mentoring. So we spent 2 days together. Here are these men who have really experienced a lot in their life, spiritually and ministerially. It's just been, it's awesome. Two of them are guys that I've heard about and admired, and here they are wanting to mentor. And what the first night, what we did is took the opportunity to say, to have them evaluate who, name one person before you were 30 that impacted your life, and tell the contribution that he made and he or she made, and how that relationship came about and all the rest. Every single one of the 10 It was an inspirational model. You guys, you know, just almost like it was a setup. Modeling and inspiration is so important. Why are peers not important at this place? Okay. Peers are just as confused as you are. What else? How do people in their 20s view peers? Competitive. You just have to look at the disciples. They're all, you know, in that 20 stage, and they looked at each other as competitive. So even though we have these neat peer groups in their 20s and they get together, they're not getting a whole lot of value in that. They'll get some encouragement and keeping going, so we don't want to encourage them not to do it. Excuse me?
They don't want to get behind.
Yeah, right. But the real impact is model and inspiration. So it's very important. If you're working with these kind of people, they get modeling and inspiration. Where can we get that for them? How do we expose these people to modeling and inspiration? Let's say you've got a 20-year-old, 25-year-old. How are you going to expose him or her to models and inspire them? What kind of things can you do? Introduce them to people. Mm-hmm. Bring them by, those kinds.
Talk about them. Tell us some of the
story. Okay. Mm-hmm. What else?
Huh? Be that for them.
Be that for them. Be aware. And Bobby's helped me in that when we first got to know each other, is to understand that I used to think it was a little egocentric to say, well, I'm a model. And I'm a model whether I like it or not. So I better pray for myself. And so, you know, we all are. Dan, were you going
to
add one?
I was going
to
say,
dude. Okay. Making sure there is time. And see, now that's interesting, because we had more of that. We haven't figured out the mechanism to do that yet in this present phase of the Navigators. It used to be in a nav home, and in one sense, where there's a lot of that going on. We had 17 men and 11 women that lived in our home over a period of 11 years. And it's amazing, as we revisit them and they talk to them, every single one of them are basically raising their children and have the same convictions that we have. It's interesting. And we didn't even think of that because we were only in our 30s, going through our 30s at that time. And so it's interesting, isn't it? Well, so good or bad, they're doing it. And I'm sure you have the same experience. Biographies and autobiographies, absolutely. And that is absolutely critical. People don't read today, especially men. You know, we have trouble getting them to read. So I've come up with every possibility I can. I find it's tremendously important to perhaps put them in clusters where they read something and in 2 months all come back and talk about it. Or you give it to them and say, if you want to do something together, read this book and we'll talk about it. I've just done that with one fellow who wants to mentor me. He's one of our missionaries. I mean, he would like me to mentor him. And he wrote to me and asked if I would, even though he can't get it where he is. And he said, could we do it by correspondence and could you visit me? And I said, sure. But I just gave him an assignment. I gave him two books to read and I gave him about three questions. Because I know he won't read them, but there are a couple lessons in there I want to get after. But modeling is powerful. And so this is important that we just think about that. Now, in this stage here, the 40s and 50s, understanding now what we're going to go through there, the demands on our time, if they're married, in the family, in your job. I mean, these are the times they're asking 10, 11 hours a day in your job. And they're saying to you subtly, not directly, the competition is tough, and if we've got to cut back, we're going to cut back the ones who aren't producing. And boy, that's put pressure in the marketplace. And churches, you know, you've come out of a NAV background, you know something about discipling, they want to use you. So you feel the guilt there. So you've got church, you've got your profession, you've got your family, you've got all of these things. So what is this person, and then you run to the risk of that dabbling and plateauing, what kind of help do they need there from the mentors? Okay, they need to help keep focus. They need somebody who's going to give them some understanding about what they're going through. Perspective is what they're missing. perspective is what they need. But where are they getting that help today? Just think, what's happening? Where are they getting that kind of perspective or help or input? Not, well, any of our people or, you know, anybody in the 30s there. Mostly through peers. And the problem with peers is you do have a great value of sharing the same problems and struggles, and you can help. But that's why I believe 2 Timothy 2:2 talks about that all through the Bible. We see the older generation helping the next generation. We see Titus 2, older women helping younger women. I've seen women, my wife is very actively involved in mentoring, and she'll meet with women, and they'll have five or six of them meeting together to talk about mothering. And yet none of them have been further than just their six-year-old kids. What they needed is some input from somebody who's gone down further. But somehow it's not connecting. There's no mechanism. So you go into a church today, and if it's one that's modern and moving and big, what do? You walk in, you say, oh, you're early 30s, young children, we have a class for you over there. Oh, older senior citizen, yes, right over there, and careful those steps over there. Okay, and then you, oh, you're not married, you're single? Well, back here we've got a singles group going very well. Oh, you've got children with teenagers? We have a great class for parents of teenagers right over there. Well, now that helps. But it's missing the vertical connection. And I call it the missing link in our society, in our whole evangelical world. The vertical is missing. And we're going to let a mass of people move out of this life, and they're not going to pass on the values and experiences and the lessons that they learn and they could give us. It's just a powerful, powerful tool, and yet it's not connecting. Why is it awkward? Why is it we are finding older generations and younger generations not connecting?
Some of that has been, we've bantered that around in our church one time, some of it has been because of the younger generation does not know how to relate to the older generation. And the older generation is not working at relating to the younger generation, so they've continued to emphasize this quote-unquote generation gap. That why they can't relate to me, they don't understand me. And so that's been reinforced in the secular world, and the church has bought off.
Okay, good. Anybody agree or any other thoughts? Yes, Chip?
Sometimes we run into men, like your reaction was, well, I don't really see myself as a model, and I think there's a lack of confidence on some parts of men who've been down, the women who've been down the road really do have confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, uh-huh, very good. Susan? Yes, yes, good. Kevin?
Two things I would add. One is when a person's in his 30s, 40s, and early 50s, there's tremendous productivity. And most of the industry wants productivity, they don't want wisdom. When they get older, they have to pay for wisdom, and they don't want to pay for it, so they just bring up the new people. The other side of it is, I'm watching my parents and other parents who are now retiring, and they say, hey, I put in my time, forget it. I'm going to go spend my retirement. I don't want to be tied down, and they just want to be loose. So it's kind of an interesting dilemma. They just want to be free. So they're almost abandoning the responsibility.
Go ahead.
I think in your third phase, well, we need to stimulate, motivate, show the importance of investing. A lot of older people don't see the value of investing. Thank you, people. A second thing, you know, I asked this question to a cluster group in mentoring that was finishing up 4 months training and mentoring. And one of the guys says, this is one reason why we don't have the vertical connection is fear of being rejected if we ask somebody to say no. You know, what that does to my own ego and my personality. How true that is for everybody, but that's that one thing.
Well, there's definitely an intimidation. I was with, about a year ago, giving a day and a half on this stuff, and just the relationship cluster that one needs. And we spent a lot of time in mentoring and all the rest. After the session was over, it was Saturday late afternoon, and the pastor wanted to pull together, and he had three other staff, and one was a young youth pastor, 25 years old. So they were getting just some feedback, how'd it go? And of course, you know, the first 10 minutes are just all this affirmation. And when, so I realized I had to ask some hard questions to break it out of that. So I just said, well, now, could we just go around and just say, how have you personally responded to what was shared? And where are you personally? And what? So we did. And we got to this 25-year-old, and he said, I desperately need a mentor. He said, I grew up in a tragic home. My dad was an alcoholic. Saw him beat my mother. I have no idea what it's like to be a father or a husband. And he said, I've got two little kids now. I've been married for 5 years. And he said, I just desperately need a mentor. Now, here are seven elders, the pastor and two others. They have just gone through this course. I was expecting that somebody was going to leap across the table, get him by the shoulder and say, you're mine, I got you. You know, they've just seen this. And there was the opposite, a quietness. He stood there and kind of said it. He had tears in his eyes. Nobody made a move. So I said, well, probably after they're a little bit embarrassed right now. So nobody made a move, and that's when we got there. I said, well, now let's go back to Ed. Is there anyone here who could mentor? Everybody hung their heads, you know, kind of like this. Nobody, and I had gotten to know some of these elders. One guy has five kids. They're all grown. They're godly kids. He's known for his family. I mean, it's just amazing. So after it was all over, I went back. So I went to this guy, 64 years old, neat family. So I said to him, I said, Bill, can you help them? He said, well, no, not me. Or the pastor probably has to do that. I said, no, Bill, you can do it. He said, well, I'm not a teacher. I said, that's not what he said. Nobody's asking for a teacher. Just walk together. So he said, well, I don't know what to say. And I said, well, here's what to do. I said, you go to him and say, I heard your cry. I'm not sure if I'm the man, but let's just meet together and talk about it. And when you get there, get a breakfast or something, go get this book. And I suggested one on how to be, you know, a growing family. Just one of the books out there. And it was about a year ago, so I can't remember which one it was. So I said, just take that book and just say, how about if we read this book together? We read a chapter or two, get together and talk about it. And as you do that, all that experience, that lessons, everything's going to come out in you. So he said, okay. So he did. He did that, and about 6 months later, I was back in there and I talked to him. He has already moved in there. He's become grandpa to the kids. He is just pouring it out. And I asked the young youth pastor, how's it going? He says, this has saved our life. He says, this guy loves us and walks with us. I said, what have you learned from him? He says, I just all these little things. I said, well, has the book been helpful? He says, yeah, but I mean, we read the book and he just then talks. Well, then I walked to him and I said, how's it going? He says, well, I'm not sure I'm doing so well. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, we're just talking. I don't know whether we're... I said, oh, man. You know, and he's invited him over the house. Well, we'll get there. But now, why was it that he is hesitant? Why was it that we can't get him into the game of mentoring?
Well, that may be, but I think sometimes, too, in churches today, men are made to feel like they're not spiritual. If they don't have the time in Bible study, my dad and I have interacted about this. My dad has a real, he doesn't think he has anything to offer because he's not a student. He's not academic. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't see his experience as being simple. I just live life. And he doesn't see his experience as being very valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think the church has made some businessmen that have been around, their women. They've been homemakers, so they've had the time in the Word, and they haven't. And they are constantly made to feel inadequate as a spiritual leader because they don't have the depth of Bible knowledge as their wives do. Mm. So they're not only are do their wives, and their wives don't always make them feel that way. They feel that way. Something that is being said or that is being communicated, the people that we lift up tend to be Bible scholars. You know, they whip out, you get into a discussion, they throw out their Hebrew and their Greek. These guys are making feel so inadequate. They don't think they have anything to offer because they don't see experience as being valuable.
Sure.
Could we today in our churches make teachers the ability to teach and convey an idea in a pulpit as a critical gift of a mature believer?
And we've added to that. Sure. And we've added to that, too, by separating the groups according to age. I've been to one Bible, I have one church that supports me. I was there in time enough to go to Sunday school. And I went, I said, what are the classes? And they named off all the typical, you know, laterally segmented groups. And so I found one that was just a general group. So I went to it. And sure enough, there were gray hairs, young, babies, everything in there. And I loved it. And it was so interesting to get the different perspectives. And I talked to the leader, and they'd only been about 8-9 months into being. And he's just telling me that a lot of things, the perspectives and the struggles. And one time this older couple told about what they feel like when they go into retirement and what that means and how hard that is. And this younger couple invited the older couple over to kind of draw them in. And in the process, they shared with, you know, there's just so many things like that. But I think men especially, but also women, are Satan's whispering in the ears, you're not adequate. You don't, you know, you can't do it. You don't have anything. And somehow we've got to reshape that, don't we? Meaning, Ms. Gary?
Don't you think our whole Christian culture with the seminary, having been to seminary, one thing I learned is that it seems like the agenda is set at seminaries in our country, and that just permeates the whole Christian culture with its strengths, but does need the life on life out often. And the Navigator or whatever other groups to do the life on life is kind of a thing off to the side. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's a cultural thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and some people told me, you know, these 10 men I was telling you about a couple weeks ago have all had significant ministry. And that was a neat thing about getting into the 50s. You know, we can talk about us now. And I told somebody, said, when I turned... So they said, what is it like being 50? I said, well, now I don't have to quote other people. I can quote myself. And, you know, it's a neat age. It's a neat age to be able to know enough about things, but be energetic enough to be able to do something about it. So it's a nice age. But I was talking to those of us over 50, and it was amazing. I asked them this question, and you know what they told me? And it's so true, because my father and my father-in-law that way, they grew up at a time where you didn't open your life up. You didn't do this. They were working so hard, post-World War, just putting the money out, working hard. And like many, I was at a group of men out of our church, 90 went away for a weekend. And one guy said, you know, my dad taught me how to provide and to protect. But he never taught me how to be a priest. And I just hardly had time with him. I love him. He's a dear guy. But we just can't talk about certain things. And I looked around. I said, how many of the others feel that? And boy, there were just nods and nods all over. And it just seems there is a generational thing that we have to overcome. But somehow, we've got to get it going, and it's just a burden, and I think it's that burden that we had. Yes, Chip?
I have an illustration of that, because I recognize that as well. My dad is 80, and his life is very private. It's always, his view of ministry was he just walked the walk, and I've talked to him about getting involved with us in ministry. Finally, what I've had to do is get him with a couple of staff people, and I'm going through the process with him, and he's learning about the life on life ministry at 80. And of course, he's asking
that's great.
The question, well, is this doing any good? Mm. But he's just relaying from his life, and I think, at least with him, I'm finding that I'm having to kind of walk him through that process.
Yes, sir.
Unless you want to comment.
No, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
There are three basic ways that you get into mentoring. One of them is called top-down. That's where we recognize people below us or potential and we can help them. Bottom-up, that's where we try to find somebody up there to help us. And the third way is called linking. And what Paul has done is to illustrate for you the importance of linking. And what he did was to link two people together, one of which would never have been in mentoring if it hadn't been for Paul. And we've got to be able to recognize the importance of linking, connecting people with people so that it will happen.
Thanks. Well, we can really create environments, too, where those kinds of people can have an input, just like you're doing, Chip. I think that's great. We've done that a number of times where my mother, who's 86 and is a learner and still going and godly, we'll get her around and she'll come to our house and Phyllis will gather a bunch of women around. And it's like Eve Hutton, you know, They listen. And so they'll ask, well, Mom, she's the only one there that went all the way through the depression years and walk with God and see and provide and is now knows how to relate to great-grandchildren, you know, because she has almost adult great-grandchildren. So it's interesting. And, you know, we need to expose them to it, but they don't. So Sharon and then Pat. Yes. And you know, it's only the Western society that struggles with this. When I was in Asia, you know, this isn't new. I mean, vertical linking and passing on is part of life. When I'm in Africa, that's the way they do it, Latin America. But the more modernized they become and the more secularized and the more Americanized our world comes, you know, we're teaching them individualism, which is not helping. Pat and then Matt. Ah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you just get them tasting that, that's great. But they need, I guess, vehicles or someone to sponsor them or link them like you are doing. But it's amazing how the effort it's taking to get them into that. Matt?
I think most people are aware in the video or something else that we've been working for 3 years on LinkUp. Thank you, people. Welcome to the mentor. And it's interesting that people really respond to the idea, but very few people want to actually get involved. And like Bobby, we have a very simple little application. It's basically just why you want to be a mentor, what do you feel your strengths, what do you feel your weaknesses, and what's your profession. What career field are you working in? And, you know, the initial response, and talking about mentoring, was people just chattering and come up and talk to me afterwards. And we literally have to have 4, 5, or 6 callbacks to people to get them to send in that little application as a precondition for being involved in mentoring. And, because we feel like it, the value of what you're describing here is being clearly seen where we do get people connected. It's just invaluable. It's life-changing.
Yeah.
But we can't seem to get the mentors to appreciate the value of doing something quietly, unseen, low-key, no big fanfare. You know, there's a sense in which the mentors want to be involved in much higher impact activity.
Yes.
Bigger deals, groups, higher visibility, you know, more direct sense of mission accomplished, rather than spending 18 months with what we ask. Investing in the life of one other person. But then what's surprising to me is that the proteges, you know, you think that they can climb all over each other to get access, because we use top business leaders, not just spiritually mature people, but spiritually mature people who are in top positions of leadership. We think that, you know, the young Christian leaders would just, in the marketplace, would be literally signing up to get access to
yes.
people. But they're not.
No.
It's a hard sell to get them the value of what someone who is a VP or managing director or something like that who's willing to invest 18 months in them, that it's worth their while to do it.
Yeah. Well, there's an intimidation there. I talked to a man who was 38 years old and is very intimidated by the young graduates of college. He's in computer industry, and he feels that they are so much further ahead of him, he's intimidated by him. And that knowledge glut that's going on and tremendous exposure causes them to back up. But, you know, we're in the business and God's in the business of growing oak trees, and they just grow slower, and there's no speeding that up. I will take Chuck, and then Kevin, then I'll just gotta go on here. Okay.
It's kind of reinforcing what you're saying in the Baptist criticism. I think y'all know Darrell Field, he's the son of Jackie, but he's in Atlanta, not a family, but he gathers together some Christian business professionals, kind of an upscale environment. It's really brought in Ron Jensen. They were 25 of them, so we were in back then discussing times in Africa. And he asked them who their role model was around the room. They were Lee Iacocca. I mean, every one of them, including Darrell, named a half hour master. Not one of them named a Christian Christian. So they went to work with almost their total strategy being introduced to the guys, a good Christian. Now they have about 350 dads coming out. They bring in, and they bring in businessmen who come in at their own expense. And, immersing those guys with opportunity to adopt role models and hopefully even a step further mentor.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of feed them.
You got to jump start it. You got to really work in that. Kevin, then.
You know, I don't know if this is true for some here in metropolitan areas, but one of the dilemmas we find is when people get to the point where they can be a vertical mentor, 55, 60, they retire, they leave because they can't afford to live in the cost of living area we live, so they just exit and they're gone. I mean, it's just really, you look around our church and there are just a handful of people who could even fill that role. So it's a dilemma. They just don't stay.
Yeah.
It costs too much, they're on a fixed income, they just get out.
Well, you know, it you can see the challenge, and yet it's worth getting more people into it. I believe a generation's at stake. As a matter of fact, I feel already we are losing a generation. Been involved with Leighton Ford on quite a few things this last 2 years, and one of the research projects he and some of his people did, they found out that the age between 45 and 55 basically has been left. Those people on before, they went on and did pioneering and all kinds of great things in the evangelical world, but they didn't mentor. And so what many are doing is just jumping that age and going back down to here to start anew and build new thinking. And you think about it, how many dynamic leaders and how many people in the evangelical world are pushing out in that age bracket. You know, and it is an interesting thing because, and I believe the main problem is because of the lack of mentoring. These men were so involved in the push of their own pioneering, and pioneers don't normally make good mentors. They make good models, but not good model mentors, but not mentors who can help the ongoing development of a person. Well, just to finish this out, here we need all kinds of mentors, and now peers begin to play an important role here. And here, peers play the leading role, and then the rest of them is the mentorees. They need peers and they need mentorees in their life. Not only just to pass on mentorees in their life, but to help them also to finish well. Peers primarily to finish well, but also mentorees can really help us finish well because they provide that stimulation. So just back to this, and it was with this in mind, with these needs, that we began to work on how can we get more people benefiting from mentoring relationships. If it's so important, how can we break it down? How can we make it easy? And boy, I can remember just praying and thinking because people were, you know, looking around for this great Superman, you know, who had it all together, and he was the one, and we're just still looking for this. So we thought if we broke it down into bite-sized pieces, small areas, to help, if this person initiate upward, this person could find and just identify the need area they have and make it specific and clear enough, they could go for somebody up there who could help them. So this mentoring in the intensive group, we found the discipler. I think if you, this is to help someone develop in the basics. And then we found the spiritual guide. Now, spiritual guide is different in that the spiritual guide helps in maturity and spirituality. And this is some of the thrusts we have, is this discipler, enablement in the basics, spiritual guide, accountability, directions, insights for commitments and decisions. The key here, spirituality and maturity. And so you probably need a spiritual guide the rest of your life. And when you're involved, it's fairly intense, but then you back off. It's kind of a various in and out type of relationship. And then we have the coach that helps you give motivation, skills, as it says here, and an application to meet tasks and new challenges in your life. Well, this is all in this intensive phase. Then there are those occasional mentors that come into our life. We have counselors, obvious here. Differs from the spiritual guide, and that's timely advice, perspective on all areas of life. I have several of them. Teachers, there for a period of time when you need knowledge and insights and understanding in a particular subject. Several times in my life I've needed somebody like that. When I was responsible for Europe and we got involved in the charismatic, or several of our countries are getting involved in the charismatic issues and problems. I didn't feel adequate in just making some decisions. So I got a hold of somebody I felt was excellent and had a good grasp, somebody I admired and understood the scriptures, and asked him if he would lead me through 6 months, 12 months. He said it would take 12 months, a process of studying the scriptures, studying what all the books are saying, and coming up with some of my own convictions and understanding regarding the charismatic gifts and the charismatic experiences. He was a tremendous teacher for me. So we need those periodically. And then finally, a sponsor. This is primarily an organization. You were talking about that, Andy, when you said, I don't have anybody who's affirming me, who's watching out for me, or who cares what I'm doing. And that's often the sponsor can help give guidance and protection, encouragement as one moves through the organizations or finds his right place. Now, the last one, of course, is passive. And the reason it's passive is because that person, the mentor, is not taking initiative to you, but you are taking initiative towards who they are. And so the historical mentor right here comes out of, it's our heroes, our people in life. And this is really important because we need to look at these kinds of people in our life and that have walked through life and experienced something that's important to us, read about them, and let them mentor us. Because they're like skyhooks, you know, skyhooks that bring us upward, lift us out of our daily involvement in our spiritual life and ministry. And here comes someone, we can take a whole look at their life, and as you said, it may not all be right, but what let's treat as it's true and just learn from it. And these people are like skyhooks. They pick us right up and they lift us out. History's important. Somebody's saying, well, I got to get a new book on witnessing. I told them, you don't need a new book on witnessing. History is full of it. Because in all through history, there are these archetypes. And the early archetype of the early church was witnessing. And so if you want to know about witnessing, the scriptures are full of it. John, it was Jesus witnessing about who? The Father. And the Father witnessing to him. And the Acts is all witness, all about the Holy Spirit witnessing to the people and these disciples going on witnessing. Tremendous understanding of that archetype of witnessing in the early church. We need to understand, who were the people in that? Read about them. How about these next eras? How about the great era of missions? Who were the people in the last 200 years, for instance? Read about them. See the challenges they faced. There's nothing new in that. I mean, the cost that they had to pay to go reach the people of the world, where we just raise money and go, and we still have to pay that cost, however. And it provides, again, I call them skyhooks. They lift us up in our life. What lifts you up and gives you a bigger perspective, a greater challenge? Well, one of mine is a historic mentor is George Mueller. And I have a book that's not even in print anymore, but it's called Mueller, George Mueller of Bristol. And I just have underlining and writing and everything through it. And I've been through it almost 10 times. I read it every other year. But I go back to it. And just about 6-7 months ago, I went through one of these experiences where I am 50. And I was wondering, you know, I saw some of my contemporaries that we are involved in the secular world. And a lot of them are doing all these different things. They all have their house paid for. And they're all going off on something. And they wanted us to come. We didn't have the money for it. And I just started to think, you know, am I going to still have to keep raising money for 15 more years? You know, it's getting hard and I get discouraged. And, you know, and my Phyllis said to me, honey, her grandparents lost their house because both grandparents lost their homes because of the depression. She says, what happens if, you know, we really go into a depression? And you know, maybe the money's not out there. I said, honey, we have a calling. I just take a job at the local supermarket if I have to, but we'll just, instead of going to all parts of the world, we'll go to all parts of Colorado Springs. She says, yeah. Well, you think we'll get our house paid for by the time we retire? And I said, well, the way it is now, I'll be 67, we'll have that house paid off. And I started to think about this. Well, over a period of a week, I got kind of insecure. And then somebody came along and said something to me about, hey, Paul, we're doing this new little venture. You want to get involved? And I kind of wondered, and then I walked back to the commitment I made to walk by faith. It applies to none of you, but it does to me, of to believe God and to walk through things. Well, then I thought of George Mueller. And if you know George Mueller's history, I thought of six special situations that he was in. And I went back and I read, and old Mueller came right out of those books. When he had nothing, he prayed. Can we believe? Then I went to the back, to the end, addendum, where it lists all these verses that he built his convictions on. And by the fifth one there, I started to weep. I said, God, I'm 50 years old. I'm a leader in this work. And I just don't even have the faith to believe you to just meet my needs. And boy, I came back. You know, I started to think about that and I reaffirmed commitment. And it was a spiritual time. Boy, I closed that book and went back up. And it was just exciting. I told Phyllis, I said, honey, if we get down to nothing, God's going to meet our needs. And I believed it. How did I get that? Old George Mueller came flying out of, you know, those books and mentored me. See, that's making these historical. Don't just read them for nice stories. Write in them. And I didn't realize the effect. I was mentoring this guy, and I gave him my book, and I got that idea from Bobby. And he read my book because there wasn't anything about George Mueller. He gave me back the book, and he said, wow, that was quite an experience. And I said, what do you mean? He's quite a great guy. He says, no, I'm just talking about the notes you have in those things. He says, you really had some spiritual experience because I write down commitments I made and agreeing with them. Attaboy, George, I'm with you, you know. It's just great. Make those people come alive. And so now I give out only that book. I don't even let them. I say, take this book, read it, help George come alive, you know, and ask him questions. So we can do that. Contemporary mentors, boy, find them. Go for them. Well, if we work at this, we can just see this come alive. And, of course, these other ones, I think you know that these are more a close-in peer, a brother or sister. We call it a close buddy. And this is, you know, varying degrees. They don't have to be real close, but you need one or two of them because you get that special dimension of peer input. They don't have hierarchical relationship to you. They have straight on. That's where the peers really help because they're wrestling with the same problems. They can challenge something that you're doing and it doesn't, you know, they're not involved here. But having mentorees in our life, what do mentorees bring to you and me as mentors? What are some of the things they bring to you?
Fresh blood.
Absolutely. Fresh. They keep us fresh. And they are really fresh, aren't they? Okay. What else? Okay, they can minister to us, can't they? All right, restoring hope. What else? How about consistency? Their integrity is really challenged, isn't it? Because I know, I asked a couple of staff one time, I said, when was the last time you actually discipled someone? The guy said, well, I haven't been doing that for years. I've been primarily working with staff. I said, brother, you better get into one because you're missing out on it. You know, why? I mean, that keeps this integrity. You know, it keeps me checked. I was just walking through one guy and we were memorizing verses and following him up and he's going along and about the 10th week, he's only 22 years old and he says, hey, let's review all our verses. And I've memorized these verses for years and I was kind of getting along on that. And he suddenly said, I said, let's review the verses, all 10 of them. So he shot them off. He says, okay, now you're up. And so I got the first three well. The fourth one, I kind of missed some things. And he kind of helped me a little bit. And the fifth one, I missed a whole phrase. So he says, well, we better hold here. He says, why don't you just kind of review them and we'll get them next week. Well, I got home, boy. I got working and reviewing all these things, you know, and these same old verses. And just the area of, you know, the freshness and the challenge. And we can't afford to be out of touch with some mentorees. I hope we'll always, you know, keep them in our life. Some intensive, some occasional. And some were passive. Just were those models that they need. Well, I think that just about wraps it up on that. But we realize in our Navigator work that's just decentralizing and doing many, making many good decisions. One of the areas that we're going to have to work on is developing a network of relationship. And whose responsibility is going to be to develop that? Ours. You bet. We've got to go for it. We just have to go for it. And if you don't have it, you know, we just need... Someone's often said to me, well, Paul, with all of these little figures up there, do I need all of them in my life? And I said, no. If I had to choose what you would need from my own experience, I'd say you need some, by God's grace, a spiritual guide, a real close buddy, and one good mentoring relationship in your life. And if you have at least that, you will be blessed. And you'll have a lot of good things happening in your life. So, okay, let's take a break. And then what we're going to do is just open up for questions on all that we've covered. Anything that you want to talk about, get back into Bobby's stuff on the boundaries. Or even this morning, some of the leadership styles. So let's just take five and just stretch for a bit, and we'll go back at it. Okay?